The Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember when you used to be now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about a study from the University of Reading, which is in the United Kingdom, of how wild blueberries can help with cognition in 7 to 10-year-old school children. That's a good thing. We have about 15 more studies to show you how to live a longer and healthier life. Then we're going to have no guests today. We had a powerful guest last night, two of them. Wow. In fact, it was so important that you hear what was going on that I extended the show for an additional 20 minutes and with Dr. Epstein, as well as Zach, the whistleblower from Google. I'll give you some insights of what I thought was most important a little later on that. But we're going to continue with our commentaries. And the commentary today is about tyranny. I was up last night writing this. I was so motivated after the show, I wanted to share these points of view because now we're seeing all these strings coming together. Who's pulling these strings? Who controls us? What is the shadow government? Who are really the deep state members? What corporations do they own? Is it just that they allow politicians to get away with anything, providing that they are serving these oligarchs' need? They're certainly not serving the public's need. So I'm going to combine my commentary with John Whitehead's New Kind of Tyranny, and I'm going to have John on because he is one of the finest constitutional scholars. Yesterday we had Danny Sheehan on. Equally up to the task is John Whitehead. So we'll hear from John today. Then to share some audio clips, which you can also watch. You just don't have to hear it, but if you go to youtube.com/prnfm. Again, that's youtube.com/prnfm. Then you can hear part two of the madness of putting 53,000 5G satellites into space by Dr. Claire Edwards. She was in Norway talking about it, and the first part of it was a very humanistic approach. How could you possibly use your scientific acumen, your business skills, your corporate leadership responsibility to put a completely untested technology, 5G, into our lives, where there's no place on the planet that we would be immune from this? And she gave the example of one of her friends suffering from environmental sensitivity that had to move out of Austria because she was so deadly ill. I've counseled many people with environmental sensitivity. It is not a phantom condition. It's real. So, you know, I want to continue on showing now the science today that she will discuss about how bad this is. Also, we're going to continue with honest government telling us about the police state. And then, time permitting, will the world end because of climate change? This is a part of Apocalypse Now. It's about 15 minutes long. We'll get to as many of these topics as possible. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. Oh, and by the way, I've chosen not to do the New York Times challenge today because we have had three very intense programs and with four investigative reports. That's all within 7 days. So we're going to give it a break for today, and we're going to hit it again hard tomorrow. So tomorrow we will be offering a legitimate challenge to the New York Times attacking anyone who has a question about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Now, when it comes to fruits, there are three that stand at the top of the list. And one of those three is wild blueberries, also black raspberries and blackberries. So if you were going to have three each day, those would be three of the best you could have in your body. But according to the latest science out of Reading University in the United Kingdom, there are many studies that show that flavonoids, which is a subclass of polyphenols, is associated with improved cognitive function across your entire lifespan. which means that as long as you start early in life and your parents give you lots of fruits and vegetables, and especially berries, then you're going to have better cognition. You're going to have better, healthier brain. It's that simple. And that's exactly what this research showed. It showed that the berry flavonoid enhances cognition. Well, if that's true for a young kid, why wouldn't it also be true for an older one? Now, they don't have that study, but I'm doing that study as we speak. I'm doing what hopefully, and again, it's a hypothesis, but that's true of all legitimate science. Reproducibility is a foundational tenet for all good science. Can other people using the same protocol reasonably expect to come up with the same results? But in this study on aging that I'm doing, trying to, for the first time, reverse the DNA, repair the damage to a DNA, and in effect have a manufacturing of young stem cells in older people. The average age is about 74 years of age. But I do have a subset. I have a subset of a 40-year-old, a 50-year-old, and a 60-year-old. All vegan, athletic, and healthy. And now I want to see if the protocol will impact them. They've all had their blood workups done also. Why would I have three people, each representing a different decade? Because we can fairly well state that aging, real aging, begins at about age 27. And by 35, you're well past going into advanced aging. We call it middle class, but it's not. It has nothing to do with class. It has to do with your genetic age, because that's your real age. The biology of your cell will determine how long you're going to live, not your chronological age. And so if these three people show a substantial, statistically significant, let's say, decrease in their DNA damage and more stem cells and more biomarkers, there's 68 biomarkers we're measuring, then imagine what that will mean. It means then that people in their teens and 20s following a similar lifestyle and protocol could then prevent the very illnesses and premature aging that we're seeing at an epidemic level across the globe. There is no reason why a person could not live in good health to about 120. And an entire team of some of the world's greatest anti-aging scientists are aware of this. They're actually being filmed for this this study. And when the results are in, they'll review them and they'll give us their final analysis. In any case, guess what's in every single person's diet every day in large amounts? Berries. They start the morning with, well, what I would call a $40 shake, because, I mean, I'm having to buy this stuff, so I pay attention to the little details like cost. And you're getting a huge amount, like 6 ounces of blueberry, wild organic blueberries, and then strawberries and raspberries. That's just the berries. All the other things go in that drink, and they're having that 3 times a day plus 15 total glasses of juice a day. And so we're going to see some cognition issues, because we allowed a person in who is in stage dementia, was just waiting to die. And the daughter said, there's no downside. She's going to pass. Allow her in the study. And I said, well, she can't be in the regular study because that would skew the study. But well, let's see what happens with the same protocol. And if it's positive, then think of all the millions of people, tens of millions of people worldwide that could help. So thus far, all the results we can actually measure without doing the blood. Again, the blood comes in 2.5 weeks. We're only 2.5 weeks having this study over. But let's just say that major things have changed. Now, here's what's actually changed. In fact, I don't know if we can organize this, but let's see if we can get Melanie or Luann to contact Pieta to get her on the phone. But if we can't get her, here's what she told me. A, her mother now has eye contact. Before she didn't. She gets up laughing in the morning instead of screaming at the top of her lungs. She is able to have word association and actually speak some words before none of this. It was gibberish. Talking, but no words, no cognitive awareness. Is able to have a brightness in her eyes. Her head is up instead of hanging down on her chest. These are very important. And these are showing that the brain is changing. We're able to rebuild parts of the brain like dendrites, etc. So we'll see what happens. Again, it's just one person, and it's not a part of the regular study, but they're using the protocol to see will it impact. Because if we see it change, if we see a statistically significant change in her blood, then I'll do a study just on dementia for 3 months and Alzheimer's in the spring. So you start by observing. In any case, so when you want to observe, just do this for yourself. Start a little diary. When you add blueberries, a cup of blueberries every day, wild blueberries, at the end of a month, have you noticed any difference in your health? And if you have, make note of that. Then the next month, add a different berry to the same berries. And so you keep doing this until you start to see, wow, the berries have these phytonutrients that are able to repair DNA. That's a big thing. Now, from the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia, published in Frontiers Nutrition, comes a study about how your diet can influence your environmental impact. And what it means is this. It means that on a global phosphorus footprint, that should not be neglected. And phosphorus, by the way, is an element essential for all living beings and is thus critical in food production. And mined phosphorus rock is a non-renewable global resource that is nowadays becoming increasingly scarce, which poses a severe problem to the farming industry. It needs phosphorus in the form of fertilizers to sustain crop productivity. And crops have two entries into the human food chain, direct consumption or indirect consumption by rearing animals, which can be converted to human food. But the example is really foolish. Because 1 kilogram, which is 2.2 pounds, of phosphorus can be, for example, can be used to either produce 3,333 kilograms. Mind you, you're dealing with 7,000 pounds of potatoes or starchy foods. 7,000 pounds. Or that same phosphorus can produce 30 pounds of beef. 30 pounds versus 7,000 pounds? Let me repeat that. If we got away from commercial farming and got back to organic, non-tillable, sustainable farming that's been used by indigenous tribes and communities throughout world history, we could save over 95 to 98% of some of these essential minerals. Also, when you're doing sustainable farming, and you do it locally, then what happens is you can eat what is grown locally. There's no carbon footprint to get it from the field to your table. But if you, and that's why we should eat locally and seasonally and complement that with hydroponics. And there's a whole new generation of hydroponics. In fact, I'm going to be filming building a hydroponic state-of-the-art. It'll be a small model. You know, you can't compare it to these huge football field size hydroponics, but they don't have this technology. And I'm going to show how to build the most advanced hydroponic house in the world, where you could grow 30,000 plants every 60 days. So if you want to have a farmer's market, you're going to be bringing in a lot of money for yourself and growing your own food, and you can do it no matter what the weather. Anyhow, I'm going to film it. I'm going to narrate it. I'm going to do it from the ground up. And it's my public service to share that with you for free. And you'll be seeing this as it's done. That's coming up in the very near future. Final architectural plans are being done in the next week or two. In any case, let's just say that you want to be more off the grid. You want to respect what can be done collectively and individually for environment. And to help our environment. So when you go to the farmer's market or you go to a local farm and you get a group of you and you say to the farmer, would you please grow these products for us? Here are the root vegetables, the starchy vegetables, the grains, and you give them a list. And the farmer says, yeah, I can grow this. And you pay him in advance. And then when the produce comes in every week or whenever harvest is, and it should be staggered, so you can get fresh organic produce. Now, that's one thing that's being done. That saves the local farmer from bankruptcy and gets them involved in going organic. So when you grow something within 100 miles, you don't have the footprint. But when you want something that is in Michigan or Oregon or Washington State, and you live in Florida because you want cherries, and cherries are not growing in Florida at this time, well, then you're going to have a 5,000-mile carbon footprint to get that here. Whether it's flown or driven, it creates pollution. So this way, you really do a lot to go with organic. Then you go vegan, you do even more. And Arnold Schwarzenegger and the producer. Anyhow, they've joined together and they produce this documentary. I haven't watched it, but all my friends have said they've seen it, and it really is good because it shows super athletes who are all vegan, and they're stronger and healthier than they were before. My hope is that more athletes watch that and realize that much of what goes on in the world of sports is simply wrong. In fact, interesting that recently in Central Park, just before I left New York to come down to East Texas to do this study, I ran into my good friend of 50 years, Sid Howard. Now, you may not have ever heard Sid Howard, his name. He's very self-effacing. He's a very quiet guy. But he came to Coney Island, where I was doing my first ever running and walking club meeting. There were 5,000 people who came. He was one. Today, Sid Howard, being a vegan, being very conscious, juicing, doing the right protocols, he and Sam Skinner, later Sam Skinner, and Thelma Wilson, they all, along with Louise Nottage, the greatest senior athlete in world history. Now, these are not just common athletes. These are the best in the world. Why is they continue to exceed in their expectations and break records at 80 years of age? And that's because their biochemistry is not 80. It's like 40. And I believe we can knock 30 years off our biological age. So anyhow, start by going organic, buy local, go to farmers markets, support them, grow sprouts on your windowsill. These are things you can do, and it will help your body reduce the need for the synthetic fertilizers, and as well as the phosphorus fertilizers. You know, you can make your own compost piles. All this is doable. And by the way, that phosphorus ends up in our waterways, because with organic, you always grow a crop in the fall for the winter cover, meaning there's something green there that's growing. And then in the spring, you can bury that under, till it under, and then that becomes the fertilizer, which is one of the best things you can do is soybeans, because it's very rich in nitrogen, so it enriches the soil naturally, not synthetically. But it also means when the spring thaws come and the rains come, that is not washing off barren land that you would have in commercial farming and into the waterways that cause these dead zones. So it's just tie the pieces together, and you'll see why it's time to think about sustainable, local, vegan, and organic. From the University of Utah comes a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine talking about mind-body therapies alleviate pain in people prescribed opiates. Now, we know we have an opiate epidemic. We know that about 48,000 people minimally die because of opiates in just 1 year. And this was a comprehensive look across the scientific literature at the role of mind-body therapies. You know, the ones that Wikipedia denounces? Well, turns out they were wrong. Turns out body-mind medicine really does work. And it was published in the top medical journal in the United States, Journal of the American Medical Association. So because body-mind therapies focus on changing behavior and the function of the brain with the goal of improving quality of life and health. And mind-body therapies, meditation, mindfulness, hypnosis, relaxation, guided imagery, therapeutic suggestion, cognitive behavioral therapy, that's what we're talking about. So Wikipedia would like us to believe there are no legitimate studies on it. Well, unfortunately, the Journal of the American Medical Association found 4,200 studies that identify 60 previously published randomized controlled trials on psychologically oriented mind-body therapies for opiate-treated pain. And the random controlled trials included a study involving more than 6,200 participants, and they had substantial improvement in both short-term and long-term pain when they were using body-mind instead of opiates. So they found that meditation and mindfulness and hypnosis and therapeutic suggestion, they all work. So, one more yes, all of you who tried it and believe in it, you were right. And Jimmy Wales and the skeptics, once again, were wrong. And by the way, for those of you who have depression and you're taking Zoloft, something better for you, according to University of Pennsylvania, rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, rhodiola. And this was a randomized placebo-controlled trial where they tested the herb rhodiola, rosea, against the conventional antidepressant therapy, Zoloft, in patients with major depressive disorder. And guess which one did better without any side effects? Rhodiola. So, glad that that study was done. We're 22 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, and again, you can watch this segment that otherwise you'll be able to hear by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. And we're going to hear about
My darling, I've hungered for your touch a long, lonely time. Time goes by so slowly, and time can do so much. Are you still more?
Now, what I'm going to do in the interim, and then we'll come back to it, is I'm going to share my concerns. Last evening on the program, the Progressive Commentary Hour, which I hope you download and listen to it, it's about an hour and 20 minutes long, and every second of it is galvanizing, is that the message was that Google is creating a new way of determining what is fake news and should be scrubbed and banned and censored versus legitimate news. And it comes down to consensus within a field. So when he said that, I immediately retorted. So if I understand what you're saying, if 2 million mothers and fathers, and that's an understatement, by the way, had proof that their children were damaged by vaccines, they were normal until they got their vaccines, but you had the census of pediatricians who say that there is no association, then there would be no credibility given to those parents, only to the pediatricians. Yes. And let's just say that those journalists like myself, legitimate journalists, who do our homework, we don't start off with a notion and then try to cherry pick the information to justify it, so that we find after doing thousands of hours of research, in my case over 17,000 hours, and interviewing people who themselves have done thousands of hours, like Dr. Tony Bart and Dr. Suzanne Humphrey and Dr. Nancy Banks, that there is a legitimate concern about the toxic elements that go into a vaccine, from the heavy metals like mercury and aluminum to aborted fetal cells. All of these are contaminants. There's not a single thing within a vaccine that's not contaminated. But if you're reporting, if the consensus at the New York Times, which I believe as of today they have 7 reporters who are pro-vaccine and vehemently anti-vaccine. So if you took a consensus of the journalist, then you would be able to legitimately say only pro-vaccine information should be allowed on the internet and Google. Anything that challenges it, no matter what the legitimacy is, no matter what the evidence, it is irrelevant, it'll be discarded. Well, then by the same notion, extend this. Go to this idea that all the major media supported the invasion of Iraq and weapons mass destruction. So if your consensus is that all the major media believed that they had weapons mass destruction and therefore it legitimated the invasion, therefore the consensus should be that the invasion of Iraq, the destruction of a country, was legitimate because the consensus of journalists said it was so. So those people who saw that it was not legitimate, they wouldn't be heard. Now, extend that to the CDC. Now, because for 40 years they used African Americans as guinea pigs, not the first time they'd done that, by the way, and if you had a consensus of CDC scientists, and they would say, we're only here to help people with their health, then for those within the African-American community and other communities who found that they had committed this crime against humanity that no one was held accountable for, and that they, and by the way, syphilis, tertiary syphilis, it's a death sentence. But also syphilis is very easy to transmit from person. You could transmit it in a handshake. You could, in your saliva. It's very easy to transmit syphilis. So therefore, even though it was proven that they engaged in institutional racism, you would have to say that there is no racism, there is no animosity towards any group, that the CDC is exclusively there to help people with their life, and therefore all the evidence to the contrary would be denied because the consensus would come from a group. Do you see where you can go with this argument? This argument then would be interview all the drone operators and the CIA assets that guide those drones. And it doesn't matter if you're one of, 100,000 people that have been adversely affected by drone strikes and you had all these innocent people killed. As long as the consensus was we did the right thing, then the Google would say you did the right thing. Anybody who challenged it. That means that virtually everyone who has a challenge to anything that is of criminal nature or corrupt or immoral that any corporation or government agency does would no longer have any legitimate forum. That's how serious this is. And that's why I'm very concerned. It was John Pilger, who we interviewed some time ago, and I posted several of his postings last week, who said, what happens to Julian Assange and to Chelsea Manning is meant to intimidate us, to frighten us into silence. By defending Julian Assange, we defend our most sacred rights. Speak up now or wake up one morning in the silence of a new kind of tyranny. Well, from my perspective, that means we're all in peril. Why? Because in an age of prosecutions for thought crimes and pre-crime deterrence programs, yes, they're now in existence, and government agencies that operate like organized crime syndicates, there's a new kind of tyranny being imposed on those who dare to expose the crimes of the deep state, whose reach has gone global. The deep state has embarked on a ruthless take-no-prisoners all-out assault on truth-tellers. Activists, journalists, whistleblowers alike are being terrorized, traumatized, tortured, and subjugated to the fear-inducing, mind-altering, soul-destroying, smash-your-face-in tactics employed by the superpowers that be. They've militarized the police. Do you really think you can have a conversation with someone who's been militarized? Before their militarization, yes, there's a reasonable opportunity to have a dialogue. After someone has been militarized, they have been weaponized. And anything that's been weaponized is very difficult to change. Let's just take Julian Assange as an example. Assange is the founder of WikiLeaks, a website that published secret information and news leaks in classified media from anonymous sources, and he was arrested on April 11, 2019, on charges of helping U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning access and leak more than 700,000 classified military documents that portray the U.S. government and its military as reckless, irresponsible, and responsible for thousands of civilian deaths. Now, included among the leaked Manning material were the collateral murder video. That was done in April 2010, and the Afghan war logs, which was in July 2010, and the Iraq war logs, which was October 2010, and 250,000 diplomatic cables. And the collateral murder leak included gun sight video footage from two AH-64 Apache helicopters. Now, I've watched that many times, and I'm sure many of you have, and it's terrifying because the military engaged in a series of air-to-ground attacks while aircrew laughed at some of the casualties. You're seeing innocent people, none were terrorists, just normal citizens, and they're being shot. And this is suddenly funny to the people who are doing the killing. Now, among the casualties were two Reuters correspondents who were gunned down after their cameras were mistaken for weapons, and a driver who stopped to help one of the journalists. The driver's two children, who happened to be in the van at the time it was fired upon by the U.S., suffered serious injuries. Now, I believe this is morally wrong, but the government doesn't. The president, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, the entire military-industrial complex, that's talking about all of the agencies associated with the CIA, all felt that this was not a problem. The drone killings, not a problem. Regime change in seven countries, not a problem. The coup in the Ukraine, not a problem. So the media followed the example of being propagandists instead of legitimate journalists and said it was not a problem. That if you were concerned, then there was something wrong with you, not the people who created this. Well, from my perspective, it shouldn't matter which nation is responsible for these atrocities. There is no defense for such evil perpetrated in the name of profit margins, more profiteering. This is true Orwellian fascism. However, the government would have us believe that it is Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning who are the real criminals for daring to expose the war machinery and its seedy underbelly. Did you see a group of Washington's elite lawyers coming forward and saying, this is wrong, we will work with you pro bono? No, you did not. Did you see any of the major institutions in Washington come forward and hold demonstrations to protest how people who were reporting on crimes against humanity were now themselves considered the enemy, and the people who perpetrated these crimes were to be rewarded so they could have a nice house up on Martha's Vineyard? Surely people understand this is wrong. And yet, no one sees it as wrong, especially in the media. And since his arrest in April 2019, Assange has been locked up in a maximum security British prison in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day, pending extradition to the United States, where we want to see him given a sentence of 175 years in prison. So whatever is being done to Assange behind those prison walls, psychological torture, forced drugging, prolonged isolation, intimidation, surveillance, it's killing him. If you saw the court appearance, and I posted it on my website, the 48-year-old Assange was disoriented, haggard, almost zombie-like. So that's what we have to understand. That's what's going on in our name, just like the 20 million people starving to death in Yemen and over 50,000 children dead in Yemen. That's the United States and its partner, Saudi Arabia. Also, what would happen if you came from a country and you came to Washington and you wanted to have an interview with the Washington Post and they said, well, what country are you from? And I said, you say, well, I'm from a Middle Eastern country and I just want to do business here. And you're always open for business in America. Well, good. And I've got a lot of money. Better. And I'm willing to spread that money around to journalists, to write good copy, to PR firms, to lobbyists, consultants. We have billions of dollars that we can give you in return. Got to clean up my reputation. What's wrong with your reputation? Well, we kill people. If you're gay, we will throw you off a building. But first we'll tie you to a chair, then throw you off, and then you'll hit the ground 10, 12 stories later. And if you're not fully dead, then we'll come and bash your head in. But the people who control this will go out into the gay community and say, I support gay rights, but not the gays who are being killed in Saudi Arabia. Or they'll say, yeah, and someone cheated, or we have some suspicion they cheated, so we're going to stone them to death. We're going to bury them up to their chest, and then the whole village is going to come together and stone them until they're dead. And then we're going to take other people and cut off their heads because they embarrassed us by trying to drive without a chaperone or a person of their family lineage. So we kill a lot of people. We beheaded 144 people just this year, and we're killing people all over the world, and we train all the terrorists. And, oh, by the way, you know Mr. Brennan, who is the former CIA director, who is now on air personality to give credibility to what he says over at the network? Well, he was the station chief in Saudi Arabia on 9/11. And they didn't want those 28 pages coming out about Saudi's complicity. And it was the CIA and the FBI working together that allowed every Saudi national to fly out of the country. No one else from anywhere else in the world could fly out. Nowhere. If you were from France or England, you couldn't fly. But the Saudis, it was shown, were behind this. In fact, the man in Washington who's been both the ambassador here as well as the head of security in Saudi Arabia, Bandar, he was named in this for financing it. But let's not worry about doing business with people cause 9/11. Let's not worry about people who behead people. But what if you didn't have the money? What if you didn't have the ability to put money into everyone's pockets in the military-industrial complex, and the Clintons especially? What would have been the reception if you said, yeah, hey, I behead people. I kill and chop up into pieces a journalist that was critical of us. And we kill people all over the world. We're the biggest sponsor of terrorism in the world. We finance them, protect them. We're creating a whole new school of terrorists all the time in our madrasas because of the extreme Wahhabism we promote. Someone's going to say, I can't do business with you. That would just, my God, that'd be terrible. So it's terrible if you have nothing to put in someone's pocket, but the more money you put in someone's pocket, suddenly everybody said, it's not a problem. Okay. That's what we're dealing with today. That is how bad it is. And it's getting worse because we're not paying attention to it, and we should. So I just want people in this audience to know that those of you who are paying attention to what's happening in the world, good for you. For everyone else who refused to see how bad it is and you've aligned yourself with a body politic, remember a couple years ago I said to everyone, please don't become immersed in destroying Trump. He is fully capable of destroying himself. All that's required is to defeat Trump, if that's what your goal is make it a better country. Bring back jobs. Create jobs. De-ghettoize the city. Get universal health care by taking all the excess profit out. All of these are capable. So I think it's very important that we understand the consequences of when you put all your energy into destroying Trump and nothing into helping the Americans. So when I travel around the country, I'm finding people who say, I'm a unionist, and I don't like what happened to us over the last 40 years, being lied to constantly by every administration who came and got our votes and then betrayed us. And so out of anger and frustration, they voted for Trump. So when you attack Trump and you attack his support. Remember, there were 63 million people who voted for Trump. About 6 to 8% are the alt-right. The rest are, they may not vote for him again, but that's why they voted for him. And no one on the left seems willing, the corporate left seems willing to acknowledge that. And now they're doing this whole dog and pony show of trying to impeach him. And by the way, why don't you take a very careful look at what happened when Nixon was brought before impeachment inquiry and Clinton, and then take a look at the rights that Clinton and his lawyers had and Democrats had in both of those impeachment proceedings. None of that applies today. How do you think that's going to go down when you're holding secret hearings? You're cherry-picking the people that you're allowed to bring in, and none of the opposition is allowed to even question, not the president, his lawyers. Nobody can question what you're doing. That's a very perverse thing, and that's going to fall back on you. There's going to be serious consequences to that. I'm just telling you, come out into America where I'm at, and you're going to see a lot of people are angry, and they're angry at both the Democrats and the Republicans for not honoring them. So I wish we had healthy third parties that could go out there and have some unity and get this job done, but I don't see that right now. And now we're now, I'm told we can go to that clip, so we're going to go listen to this clip, and then we'll come back from that clip, and then we're going to go into part two on 5G and why it's so dangerous, and the media, the government, Bill Clinton was behind all this, by the way, allowing the Telecommunications Commission to set no standard of health. And therefore, they can put these devices, 5G devices, anywhere they want. You can't say no. And if you have health concerns, too bad to you. So you need to hear this.
Hello, I'm from the Australian government.
Have you been too busy to notice that we're dismantling democracy? Well, here's a new app to help you keep track of me.
Introducing My Police State.
Just like My Health Record, but with no clear opt-out choice,
My Police State is for your own safety,
which is why we've already signed you up.
Because we wouldn't want you to miss out on our exciting journey into authoritarianism.
My Police State.
Packed with exciting features.
Like 20-year jail sentences if you make us look bad by committing the crime of journalism.
And especially the crime of whistleblowing.
Just ask Witness Kate,
who exposed how we helped an oil company fuck over Timor-Leste.
We're pushing to try him in a secret court
because
My Police State
also includes
new laws to break up protests,
new laws to break encryption,
facial recognition,
as well as attacks on courts and judges,
on unions,
and attacks on Auntie,
or as we call her, Antifa.
Oh, and remember, we've also made it a crime to impersonate the government,
so don't do it.
My Police State.
To run My Police State, we've created a brand new government department,
Home Affairs.
Located in Canberra's leafy suburb of Mordor,
it brings our most powerful agencies together under one single roof,
even the federal police.
Which means if we ever need to investigate, say, Border Force for human rights abuses in Nauru,
or ASIO
for cooking up WMDs to justify another war,
Home Affairs will be investigating itself.
What could go wrong?
Sure, there's a risk this unholy concentration of power
could one day fall in the hands of a cold-hearted minister who despises human rights and... Oh, wait.
One ring.
Oh, but hey, the PM had to do something to keep Pete from taking his job, and selling out your liberties was worth it.
Home Affairs.
Because your home is where you're most likely to be harmed.
But we also know that hyping up fears of gangs, terrorists and refugees
is way more effective at scaring you into letting us build an authoritarian...
My Police State.
If you don't like My Police State, you can opt out at the next federal election.
P.S. My Police State is supported by both major parties. Authorised by the Department.
Okay, before we go to our next clip, which is to finish off the one we started yesterday on 5G and its dangers and how all the scientific literature, independent scientific literature, shows it's dangerous, but how the power of money, the power of Google and Facebook and Verizon, all of these telecoms and all of the major platforms, social media platforms, are supporting 5G. Now, what does that tell you about their ethics? What does it tell you about their basic morality? What does it tell you about their caring for the very people that are using their services? But I was asked, we have in our studio, his name is Travis, and I wanted Travis to explain for the thousands of people that keep coming to GaryNall.com and wanting to get on my whatever it's called. I'm not even sure what it's called. It's called Friends Page. Anyhow, that's where I post every day wonderful pictures of nature and animals. And it's meant to inspire people, to warm your heart, to make you feel good about humanity. And at the same time, there are articles that are hard-hitting to show you corruption and what's wrong. And I'm the only one who posts on that page, by the way. Though trolls do get on, and people overnight do post some things, and I get up in the morning and I delete them. But for those countless number of people, there's another way that you can get all that information, again, for free. Travis is in studio. Hi, Travis.
Hi, Gary.
Tell people what they can do so they can get the benefit of finding all the information there for free 24/7.
So for those people who are not friends of Gary on Facebook, if you go to Gary's profile, instead of clicking the add friend button, which is there, if you look to the right of it, you'll see the follow button. Once you follow Gary's Facebook profile, you will be able to not only see the content Gary is posting on a daily basis, you also have the ability to interact with the content and so forth. So instead of clicking the add friend, click the follow button and you will be able to view all of Gary's content. So that's
where did they start? What did they begin by going to?
So if you can search Gary when you're on your Facebook profile, you can search Gary Null. And you can go to his profile that way, or you can go to facebook.com/drGaryNull. It's all one word. So facebook.com/drGaryNull. And you'll be able to get to Gary's Facebook profile. And from there, to the right of Gary's name and profile picture, you'll see the words, you'll see the button for add friend or follow. Click the follow button and you will be able to see all of Gary's content that way.
Good. Well, that way millions of people can be up to date every 24 hours because I'm posting whenever I have a chance throughout the day.
That's right.
Okay. Right. Good. Thank you, Travis. Travis is one of the techie, very smart guys in my office. If you Google stupidest guy in history looking for anything, my picture comes up and I'm going, I don't know. I spend my time doing commentaries and writing and sharing the information. It's just, I've never Twittered. I don't know any of this stuff. It's a different language. But now you have a chance to get all this stuff. And I intentionally put videos up about animals and different combinations of animals. For example, I just put up a picture of a big grizzly, and beside the grizzly is a wolf, and they become best buddies. They hang out together. They run together. Now, this is just a natural thing that happens, not all the time, but when you do see it, and then I have all these other combinations, how a baby elephant and a baby rhinoceros both ended up as friends with a little a goat and then a sheep, and how a retired elephant became best friends with a dog, and then the elephant goes in the water and the dog gets up on its trunk and goes up and dives in the water off its head and then swims back up again. Wonderful, beautiful stories. It just, to me, I believe our heart should be touched and warmed each day. We don't want to be cynical about the world we live in. We want to be honest about the world we live in. But remember, for every one of those corrupt politicians and those completely compromised people in the media, there are those who have not been compromised by the seductions of the media, like a Chris Hedges, Abby Martin, and the great people over at Black Agenda Reports. And there are ethicists, they're behavioralists, they're just decent human people in this world that we should be paying attention to. Now we're going to finish our program today, and we're going to go up to the top of the hour by having another look at why we should all be opposed to 5G technology that the media isn't saying a single word about that's negative, and the New York Times is one of its biggest cheerleaders. Shame on them.
ionosphere and the magnetosphere. Sphere amplify the radiation by 100,000 times. So these are the symptoms that electrohypersensitive people have. And in 1998, the very first satellites went up, and my writing partner on the appeal, Arthur Furstenberg, kept records of what happened at that time. Now, that was only 66 satellites, not 53,000. So they found that thousands of homing pigeons lost their way. People had asthma attacks, nosebleeds, knife-like sensations in the head, stabbing pains in their chest, feeling like you're going to have a heart attack. These are exactly the symptoms that my Swedish friend had last year. And particularly the US national death rate rose 4 to 5%. Now, power line harmonic radiation, it's already established that the power line harmonic radiation is having an effect on the ionosphere and the magnetosphere. We know that already, it's established. We also know from studies that these rockets that will launch the satellites, they produce black soot. So this is going to be devastating for the climate. The space debris issue, so as I said, we have already millions of pieces of space debris up there, and you have the issue of a Kessler syndrome. So there's a hypothesis by a man called Kessler who posits a cascade effect where you reach a point where you have so much debris that it starts colliding, all the pieces start colliding with each other with a cascade effect. And he says if this happens, then the space orbits could be unusable for thousands of years. And we do depend on satellite. We depend on satellite for our weather forecasting, for our communications, for our aircraft, for remote sensing the Earth. There are lots of reasons why we're already quite dependent on satellites, and we can't afford to lose the Earth orbits. There's a project that you're probably aware of, I imagine, which is called HARP, and you have, it's an ionospheric heater, and you have this also in Tromsø in Norway, which is part of it. And I think it's interesting that there are very close parallels between HARP and 5G. So, both of them use banks of antennas in phased arrays. Both of them have a beam-forming ability. Both can be used as a communications system. Both of them have the capacity to disrupt people's mental function. They can both impair brain performance of very large populations. So whole regions of people's mental function and emotions can be changed by this. Both of them can do voice-to-skull communication, putting a voice into people's heads. Both of them can heat the skin, which has already been discussed today. They can both change people's emotional state, manipulate thought and behavior. And we know this from Iraq. During the war in Iraq, Iraqi soldiers just put down their arms, their weapons, because they had been fed a frequency which put them into fear and panic. So we have the proof of this. Both of them can also make individuals very slow or hyperactive. And we also know this from electrohypersensitive people. Now, we've had a whole lot of warnings from different people. about the threats of 5G. This is what Professor Martin Paul says could be the results: breakdown in mental function, sterility, damaged heart function, and societal collapse. So imagine if people's brain function is affected. And we know that the brain function is already affected from 25 years of cell phones. The Russian president has said that the hope that new technologies would help, would save the planet, turned out to be illusions. An EU report this year has told us that it's not possible to accurately simulate or measure 5G emissions in the real world. We simply don't know the consequences. All we can do is extrapolate from the science that we have from earlier generations of wireless technology to imagine that 5G would be much worse given what we know about the technicalities of 5G. More warnings. So you have NOAA and NASA in the United States that are saying that this could seriously affect their work. It could seriously affect weather forecasters' ability to predict major storms, and it could lead to loss of life. So, as I said, 5% of the world's population are already tortured by microwave sickness. It's called electrohypersensitivity, because when you call it electrohypersensitivity, it points the finger at the person. Oh, you are electrohypersensitive. You have a problem. No, no. The person is exposed to an environmental toxin. That's the problem. It's not that that individual is particularly special. We're actually already, all of us, affected by it, but to different degrees. And we don't know why some people are more affected sooner than others. It's just, it's not known at this stage. Now, Switzerland is very much the epicenter of all this. They had 5G earlier than some of the other countries. And so we already have evidence from Switzerland about how the people in Geneva are suffering. The precautionary principle. The precautionary principle should be invoked when there is any doubt. We have already in excess of 28,000 studies which talk about the biological effects of electromagnetic radiation. But we don't need 28,000 studies to invoke the precautionary principle. This is enshrined in EU law. If there is one study which casts doubt and presents dangers, that is enough to invoke the precautionary principle. So you have a number of governments, the governments of Austria, Belgium, Germany, Netherlands. In the German's case, it was the Federal Office on Radiation Protection, which said that 5G would expose people to very much higher levels of electromagnetic radiation. And the fact that they have all drawn attention to the dangers of 5G should mean that they invoke the precautionary principle. They haven't done so. So what we have is a collapse in the rule of law. We have laws that should be protecting us, and they're not.
And that is a doctor from Great Britain talking about 5G. And unfortunately, Claire Edwards is not being taken seriously in the United States. The news media in America has blacked out this entire discussion. 28,000 studies. A letter was signed about how dangerous it is by thousands of scientists around the world. You don't see a single thing mentioned in American media. And the reason she was kind of doing a staccato talk is because she, if you watched it, you saw there's a screen behind her and she was doing a PowerPoint presentation. That's why it wasn't just constant. So we're sharing this with you. We'll continue to share the most important stories that we can find on public health issues. Go to prn.fm and download last night's show. It is a powerful show. It's what's going on inside Google and their so-called utopian idea. They want to turn America and the world into a utopian environment that they would decide what is right, what we should believe, what we should think, and how we should live. Yeah, that's Dr. Epstein last night from Harvard telling us that. And he was the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. He's a prominent scientist, and he was one of the two guests we had on. You won't want to miss it. I'll look forward to sharing more tomorrow with you. Have a nice day, everyone.